evening, everyone, and welcome to Going Shamanic. My name is Jennifer Ingracio, and my medicine name is Snowhawk. I'm happy to host this show tonight on the Sacred Masculine. This show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking callers. In the new book, Healing with Horses, Growth and Transformation Through the Way of the Horse, today's guest describes his experience in a therapeutic session working with his male horse, Spirit Walker. Spirit Walker is a horse with a painful history. In this session, Spirit Walker demonstrates the potential of masculine energy and shows himself as a healed being who refuses to be defined by his past. Spirit Walker has been very attentive, his ears perked up and pointed in my direction. He knows on some level that all of this is really important. Inside the round pen, he stands 6 feet away, his big dark eyes locked in on me. He's motionless, and when he hears my heart desires, his penis drops. This was a profound event. Our male horses drop their penis when a strong heart connection has been established between the participant and the horse. So Spirit Walker was acknowledging the connection and expressing it. Men are like the sun. What you see is what you get. There's nothing hidden, no secrets to be revealed. Spirit Walker is standing in his full pride, his full masculinity, the victim having been replaced by purpose and pride. He's rekindling a feeling deep down within me, the pride of youth banished with age, beliefs locked from criticism, hidden from self-scrutiny, and a near silent whisper seeking to escape or proclaim who I am. And I hear, write about the masculine. My immediate response is fear, my instinct screaming denial, I didn't hear that. And my ego mind uttering a chuckled and sarcastic, oh yeah, sure. In a split second, my response is quickly shadowed by a childlike innocence, a hearing a loud and vocal response to a silent question that no one was supposed to hear. Where did that come from? And then the realization, the opening of a door deep in my unconscious. Light entering a dark space. The door slowly exposing a crack of light that softly fills the room to reveal a thought. A treasure chest in the middle of a vast and empty room, unopened and inviting. I feel his invitation to enter the round pen and interact and bear witness to his species wisdom. On entering, I walk to the center, take a breath to recenter myself, and open myself to the experience. I send out my invitation, asking him to show me. He begins to move, walking, then standing in the southeast, the place we know to be our self-concepts, our attitudes, our approaches to life, and our ancestors. Standing with determination, he picks up his left front leg and digs it into the ground, pulling it towards him, moving the shavings, and clearly drawing a line. Using his right front leg, he does the same, and he repeats his actions alternating between left and right legs. Now, normally, a horse paws at the ground to show frustration, or they pound the ground to make a point, but this is different. Alternating from foot to foot, he hits the same mark, the same spot, each time, and pulls back, drawing a V in the ground. His actions hit a chord in me, knowledge old and true. Earth medicine, they call it. The left side is our feminine, our receptive side, and the right is our masculine, our active side. Were we at one time so balanced that the two were one? That spot that he keeps hitting so accurately with both hooves, the bottom of the V, and then cutting into the ground, he clearly is showing how it's separated, how the point becomes a line, and each line travels a different angle, ending in separation. His behavior is so out of character for any horse, my mind is racing through assumptions, scenarios, and hypotheses all at the same time, stretching for a thought that fits. Is he showing me the path that I've traveled or am traveling? Have I consciously or unconsciously allowed my masculine and feminine to slip and be out of balance? Or is he painting a bigger picture, one that exposes the separation existing or expanding farther apart between the masculine and feminine? be it in relationships, our society, or exponentially affecting humanity and the world. Spirit Walker is now staring at me, his eyes piercing me, making sure I got it. And then he drops. His entire and complete body drops right to the ground. And now Spirit Walker is rolling, exposing his belly, showing his full vulnerability. Horses are prey animals, and they are preyed upon by meat-eating animals, including humans. When they expose their belly, they trust in the moment that nothing is going to harm them. When they roll in front of us, they are trusting the moment, or reminding us to be vulnerable, to let down our guard, and to experience the moment as it presents itself. Our guest today is André Lecliptu, co-director of the nonprofit corporation Horse Spirit Connections. As a shamanic and facilitated equine experiential learning practitioner, André incorporates native ceremonies with horse wisdom and interactions to help individuals and groups align or transform to achieve self-empowerment and emotional growth. Welcome to the show, André.
Hi. Hi, General.
I love that book.
Oh, thank you. Actually, it was the first time I've actually heard someone reading it out loud. It was quite an honor to hear that. Thank you.
And it's interesting because when I was looking for someone to host or to come on the show to speak about the sacred masculine, your face kept coming up. And then, of course, when I emailed you and I asked you if you would come on, you were like, well, that's weird because I just wrote this chapter for this new book, and it's all about the sacred masculine. Now, so lately, I mean, we've been talking a lot about or hearing a lot about vulnerability, especially by pioneer researcher Brené Brown. What does vulnerability have to do with the power of the sacred masculine, and what is the sacred masculine in its pure form?
A loaded question. I like those. The sacred masculine to me is really that finding that absolute place of balance between within ourselves of the masculine and the feminine, because we do have both within us. And it's also finding that balance between heart, mind, and body. And I think over the many years, the masculine has lost that, and it shows all over in many faces and also in how we're treating the world. So that whole belief of being out of balance is what Spirit Walker was showing, was this big separation point, and looking at it on how it is affecting everything else.
Mm-hmm. So it is pureness, what is the job of the sacred masculine? Like, what is the role?
Well, I think if we go back to some of our shamanic teachings, you're familiar with the masculine and the feminine triangles. So the masculine is very much about being a seeder, a provider, and a protector, whereas the feminine is the heart, which is birthing, the hearth, which is safety, and the home, which is security. So when we put the masculine and the feminine together, we are in full balance, hence relationships, if you will. And if we look at what has happened to the male over the years, men nowadays don't have a good awareness to how they're seeding and what they're seeding. That's the number one. As the role of the provider, that has changed dramatically in our society, because all of a sudden now most relationships, both people are providing towards the income of the household. And so there's a lot of men who, if they're bringing less than what the woman is bringing, have actually start having an issue around that, because they're no longer seen as the provider. If we move into the protecting role, you know, we now have police, we have armies, we have lots of things within our community that take care of the protection role. So the masculine, which was in its wholeness of the seed of the provider protector, is now really, it's watered down to being next to nothing. And I don't believe that he's found a way to actually step into how to take those three cores and make it into something bigger and new. Mm-hmm. The feminine, on the other hand, still has the ability of the heart, the hearth, and the home, but also is now providing and even protecting. So the feminine has gone, if you will, from one extreme going into another into the masculine extreme, but the masculine hasn't had the ability to really come back.
It's interesting because we had Cheryl Watson on the show last month speaking about the sacred feminine, and it's like it's impossible to speak about the sacred feminine in some ways without speaking about the sacred masculine. And now I'm noticing it's vice versa in our conversation, where it seems like what's happening is men are sort of, the men that I talk to anyway, they're kind of in a bit of a, I don't want to say identity crisis, but they're trying to figure out, well, what are we supposed to be doing? Like, we can't do the same thing we've always been doing because that's obviously not working. But it's like women, I notice we've already had quite a few, you know, almost a century, I guess you can say, of building up our masculine side. And now men are being called to build up in some ways their feminine side in order to balance out their roles, I guess you can say.
Yeah, so one of the things that we can look at is actually from a masculine perspective is how do we get out of our heads?
Mm-hmm.
And again, if I go back to what the horses teach us and what Spirit Walker was doing, was going to that place of showing vulnerability. You know, men have operated from their heads for way too long, and the greed and the fear and so forth. I mean, look anywhere around you and you see how it's played out in modern society. So to me, when I look at it and I look at, okay, what is the masculine of today? The masculine today really is needs to open up his heart. He needs to take on that feminine qualities, if you will, of nurturing, of listening, of providing a space. So a couple years ago, more than a couple years ago, actually, when we started Horse Spirit Connection, what I suddenly realized was that my role as the masculine was, in fact, to seed, to provide, and protect. But all of a sudden, it was to seed the dream of what we wanted, and when I say we, I'm referring to my wife, Wendy, what we wanted to do with this Horse Spirit Connection, how we wanted to be of service out to the world. Then I needed to provide, and this is what became interesting, I needed to provide the space for her to actually take the lead.
Mm.
And then I needed to protect that space so that it could, in fact, birth itself out and to be what it became. There's a woman that we have currently in our program who does a web business of helping women entrepreneurs. And when we were chatting a while back, she was telling me that one of the problems that a lot of the women were coming forwards with was that, you know, they start a successful company. They actually ask their partner, the masculine, to either take a part in it or to relax or, you know, to enjoy life because they're now bringing in all the income and so forth. And she says that one of the things that she has to deal with is the fact that these men are actually sabotaging the company.
Mm.
And I believe that what's happening is that they're getting into their head whereby they're not seeing what their value is, and therefore it's easier to kill something than to actually give it the room for birth and to grow.
Mm.
So to me, it's like, you know, what happened this particular year that was around Father's Day on June 21st was some people believe that there was new energy coming in to actually open up for us to step into the fifth dimension. And where that was hitting was that it was opening up our fourth chakra, the heart chakra. So again, it's that if I look at it, that from the perspective of the masculine, it is again the masculine needing to open up the heart to respond to things differently, because what we've been doing is not working and is not going to continue working.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really interesting session, I think it was last week, when I had a group of 10 boys of the age of 13 and 14, and they were here to do, there were 10 of them for the day. And we did a number of teachings, and we did a number of horse activities. But one of the things that we did was go into the kiva and do a drumming journey for their warrior animal.
Mm.
What I found absolutely fascinating was their innocence and the fact that they were willing to literally lie down one in one another's lap as if that was okay.
Mm.
And all the time when I've worked with the youth between the ages of about 12 all the way to about 16, 17, there's an absolute innocence that's there. Mm. But they lose it by the time that they're 19. Mm. You know, by the time they're 19 years of age, something has come into their play that all of a sudden is pushing them into a stereotypical what masculine has been. Right?
Mm.
And so for me, it's looking at, okay, how can we open that, or what's the experiences that we can give them so that they're not falling into that prey, so they can continue to be in that absolute beautiful balance that there are and be in balance within themselves and not be afraid to show themselves.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like having a man who has, an older man that's already gone through some of these rites of passage or these transitions in his own life is kind of key to that, where we can't expect boys and teens to kind of be able to do this on their own without some kind of guidance from an image maker.
I would agree with that for sure. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was really interesting. With at one point, the boys were talking about the fact of, I'm not gay. And I kind of looked at them, what do you mean? Well, they came back with, the girls made this stick, and if they touch you with the stick, it makes you gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of howled at how the world has kind of shifted even at that level. Mm-hmm. The girls that we had the following day, same age group, another 10 girls, their response and the way they behaved was so totally different. And they'd already gone to a place of being very careful about their own image, very cliquey already. And it was interesting because when we did a wheel teaching around the false self, and one of the ones that they kept looking at was one of the things that they did a lot of was gossip.
Mm.
Whereas the men, or the boys, I should say, the boys, when we looked at the same wheel, one of the areas that they were looking at was actually the inner critic.
Mm.
You know, the inner voice of telling them what they can and cannot do.
Mm.
So interesting changes or interesting points of views that they were bringing forth.
Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, like I notice, because I work with kids and teens as well, and I notice a big difference between teens and how open they are to these shifting roles. Like the teens seem to be like really open to these shifting gender roles, more so than people of their parents' generation. So for instance, like speaking about things like transgender and bisexuality amongst teens now, it's not a big deal. Whereas when I was, a teenager, 20, 25 years ago or so, that was a really big deal. Like people, we just didn't talk about that kind of stuff. If we even knew that it actually existed, right? The transgendered stuff especially. So something seems to be shifting with them. But what I notice is the older generations, so, in their, 40s, 50s, 60s, even 30s, depending on, what background people come out of, I can see that those men, because this is a show on a sacred masculine, are having a hard time. They're having a hard time doing what you described you were able to do for the dream that you and your wife had.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say to those older men that might be struggling with maybe not being so front and center in some ways in bringing a dream forward?
I think one of the things that would, a lot of the work that I do with them when the men come here and we do ceremonies and so forth, is really looking at what value systems are in your head, where did they come from, and are they really yours?
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's going looking at that Southeast energy, which are your attitudes and your approaches, and what was drilled into you, and do you still believe in everything that's been told, that you've been told, and is it true to you? My own personal journey was, when I was around 15, as I had an incident which made me question everything that I had been told. And I started on that journey a long time ago, going, okay, you know, what is a family, what is love, what is this, what is that, and going through all those and going, okay, what is it, my own definition of it? I find that, you know, with the television, the media is so strong, and we've been so inundated with points of view, other people's points of views of what should be, that we've given up our own. Mm. You know, we're no longer stepping into that place of who we are and willing to embrace it and willing to take it out. So again, if I go back to some of the ceremonies that we've done here, and, you know, we watch people going through it and we listen to what they say, and there's such a richness when you get into a men's group and they start opening up and discussing their points of views, that anybody who's coming in all of a sudden gets opened. It's really interesting that men do not seem to be on the same path as the women are in terms of doing their own self-development work. And I think that's where we need to do, and or that's where the men need to go, and realizing that there's a lot of value there. It's one of the ways that they can find a new level of their own self-worth, which is extremely key. And then all of a sudden, the, you know, am I a seeder, provider, protector, can take on another role. But if you're stuck in the paradigm of the belief of your parents and grandparents and so forth all the way down the road, then you're going to have... you know, it's almost like having to break your own mold as to who you are.
Why do you think it's more the women that are, because I agree, I mean, everywhere I go, it seems to be women are filling up the workshops. And the, you know, I don't see as many men, which is, I anticipate in the future there will be more men. But why do you think there aren't as many men doing this kind of personal growth and spiritual work? And what do you think is holding them back?
I think what's holding him back is the culture. I'm okay. Everything's fine. It's an attitude that we have that's been drilled into us. To be honest, I'm going to take this on a little on another side just for a very quick second. Any man who is looking for a relationship with a woman should figure out that they should go to the places where they do the self-work, because there's a lot of women there that are looking for relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I think the men are very much into that. You know, you're supposed to take care of yourself, you're supposed to take care of your life, your family, and so forth, so they do not have that, the who am I in their minds. Women, when I look at the girls that are coming through that are, you know, the 12 all the way up to about 16 or so, they already have a good idea of who they are and how they fit into society and the feminine side and so forth. And it seems to me that by the time they start hitting 30, they start going on the question of, well, what am I really all about? And so they're starting to look at that self-development of trying to find that there's more. Whereas the men probably don't get hit till they're probably about 50, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden they kind of go, oh, my God, I've just spent, you know, 50 years doing all this. Where the heck am I? Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, that's also where there's a high risk of heart attacks between the ages of, I believe it's 50 to 54 or 55, mm-hmm. that there's a high risk of men having heart attacks, not the women. And I think at that point, they actually go, well, I've now gone so long that it's to open up a new door to try something new is not part of their makeup. Right? Mm-hmm. It literally takes something to pull them into it. Either some kind of an accident or a very strong person. I hate to say it, but a very strong woman would probably help a lot in terms of bringing those men into those places of self-development.
Mm-hmm. And so that means that, I mean, the women have to be quite balanced in their masculine energy as well and in their feminine energy in order to... This is just what I've noticed, what I've observed, is that when... We have teachers that are feminine, or women, and they have a really good feminine masculine balance. The men tend to be more attracted to studying and to doing that personal work with these women, sort of guiding them through. Of course, that can be true for a male teacher as well, where the male teachers that have balanced feminine and masculine energy also tend to attract both men and women to them as well. So it seems to be kind of something that is, I don't know, for men it just seems to be more important that there's that balance there as an attraction force. And I'm not sure why that is, but it's something that I've noticed, and actually that men have commented on that I've talked to.
Yes, there's definitely a big hole out there, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's I don't think there's a quick, easy answer to it. You know, even we have men come through, and they love the experience, and they say about they'll come back, but then we don't necessarily see them coming back. So I think part of that, the opening sometimes becomes too big for them, and it's hard to reassemble that into their life the next day.
I think for some people too, like it's when they start doing the personal growth work, and I count myself in this too, where there was a tendency to do a workshop or to go to a ceremony or to an event, and then I would leave everything that I experienced and happened there. Like I didn't have a way of then taking it into my life and working it in my life. Like there was a separation between the work I did in the workshop and my quote unquote real life, as if they were separate things. It took me a while to figure out, Jen, you have to actually start practicing all these tools that you're learning on these weekends in your life, like at work, with your personal relationships, with your friends, with your family. It's not like, you know, these are cool ideas that you learn and then you just never do anything with them.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that happens a lot. We also get corporations coming through. We had one corporation come through last month, and they were here 7 years ago. And they actually started off by saying that what they had learned and put into practice 7 years ago from being here with the horses, they were still doing to this day. And part of their mandate was actually, what are the tools that we can walk away at the end of the day that we will put into play to make sure that it becomes a better space? And oddly enough, the one that came out was how to hold space for one another.
Mm.
Isn't that beautiful? And, you know, if I go back to the sacred masculine of providing that space and protecting it is very much a, how do you hold space for someone so that they can have their own experience? How can you hold that space that there is no judgment, no expectations, nothing, that you are not at the effect of any of the emotions, which are the energy and motion going through, but you honor that person for who they are and give them that space? I don't think that's something that men have done for one another.
Mm.
You know, for that matter, I don't think it's men and women. I think women have an easier time doing it for one another. But when we start looking at the relationships of the masculine and the feminine, the masculine is not very good at doing that for the feminine.
Mm. And men seem to have a hard time doing that. It seems to be kind of taboo almost to just hold space for someone, like man to man. Man to man in some ways. Like for instance, the other day, and I'm gonna say his name just because he's such a influential figure in the world, my partner and I went to see David Suzuki speak in Calgary, and he was doing readings from his book Letters to My Grandchildren. And of course, so every chapter sort of he would read a little bit about a message that he had or something that he wanted to impart to each of his grandchildren. And he was talking about one of his grandchildren that's got a lot of physical challenges. And at one point when he was reading the message that he had for this grandchild, he started crying, like he started choking up. And, you know, it was interesting because his response was like a dismissal kind of response and he apologized to the audience for getting emotional and, you know, he's like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And I was thinking, wow, you know, you're reading something that's actually very emotional and very impactful. I thought personally that it was the most powerful moment of the whole evening, but it was completely diminished by his dismissal of the validity of that emotion that was coming through him.
Yeah. And I would assume that in that dismissal, in that moment, he was actually thinking about the fact of, you know, having been told you are, as a man, you're not supposed to cry in public.
And as a scientist, like, you're supposed to be rational and logical. And it was interesting because I could also feel the discomfort of the audience, not the discomfort that he has shared his emotion, but that he was negating it.
Yeah.
So there was a moment of power that was lost there for him, which was, and I could feel the energy just dissipating out of the space, unfortunately, something that could have been really, really powerful. And it was actually very powerful for me to hear a grandfather giving this message to his grandson with so much heart.
Beautiful.
So I took that away from it. And at the same time, I can see where perhaps it was a moment of image making that was lost for the people in the audience.
Yeah. Totally agree with that, yeah. You know, it's just like how many people say they're sorry. And you look at them and go, what are you sorry for? You know, it's really a lot of the conditioning that we've gone through in terms of how to act and how to react in public. And in public in front of one other person or many people, it's irrelevant to how many there are there. That's why I keep going back to, you know, some of what we need to do is go back and revisit some of the concepts that we have and see how they've been drilled into us, and can we in fact change them?
So when men come to you, how do you work with them and how do you support them? Could you sort of walk us through something that you would do with men to help them to connect more with their hearts and to feel more comfortable in the realm of feeling?
Believe it or not, the horses are probably the quickest way, the fastest way, and the most profound way that I can think of. We have a number of exercises where, you know, going up to the horse, understanding what the energy fields are all about, the energy layers of the horse, and getting into a place and having a what we call a heart connection, where we literally walk them through a visualization of opening up their heart and connecting with the horse. The horse will immediately respond to that kind of a connection. And it's that place of just starting to open. Then going through some other exercises, then we start looking, and again, this is usually individually, with or without an audience, but going through some of the other ones, it's really how are you holding yourself and how are you walking it out. The horse ends up being a beautiful mirror and a biofeedback mechanism, if you will, so they can change something and see it reflect immediately. Then if it's a group of men, then there's always some good sharing of what other people saw, right? And so that becomes a validation or a confirmation of what's actually happened within the round pen.
Mm. It was really interesting because when I was reading your chapter and the part where Spirit Walker drops his penis, I was reminded of Taoist sexual Qigong teachings that I had received years ago. When my teacher reminded us that men are naturally comfortable operating from their sexuality and they're more guarded with their hearts, whereas the opposite is true of women, that women have the challenge of learning to be comfortable with their sexuality, and of course they're really comfortable in their heart spaces. And she showed us the yin-yang symbol and that it was reflective of that principle, the way the two pieces fit together. And so can you just talk a little bit more about that a little bit? Because it seemed to me to be a pretty huge metaphor for the masculine.
Okay, help me out on this one.
I think as a woman sometimes it's, you know, in the past it's been a little bit scary I admire it in men, and at the same time it's kind of like, oh, you know, this just such a strong connection with their sexual life force. So when Spirit Walker dropped his penis, but then also his heart was open at the same time, which was obvious actually in the way that you wrote the chapter, the way that you had this experience, I thought, holy cow, like imagine combining that power of being so comfortable in your sexuality with a completely open heart. Like, I don't even know what I'm asking you, but it just struck me as like a really like huge moment of just like, what would be possible for men? Maybe that's the question. What would be possible for men do you think, if they were able to, and how would the world look differently if men were able to hold those two things as strongly?
I think it would make a huge difference in the world. I think if I go back to looking at the horses themselves, they operate from a place of not having any judgment. They operate from a place of being in the present moment. And we are so opposite. You know, we're afraid to show because we're going to be judged, because someone's going to laugh, because someone is going to make a comment. We don't believe in working in the moment because, you know, I love the line about anxiety and depression. I mean, depression is being worried about the past, and anxiety is being worried about the future. What the hell's wrong with the here and now? And it's the here. If you're looking at the here and now being the moment that you live in, and you're not worried about what people are going to say, how they're going to judge you, and so forth, then you can in fact open yourself up fully to whomever and whatever is coming through, be it another human being, another animal, or just yourself.
And the fact is, people are going to judge you anyway. You know, like, you can't control what other people are going to think, but you can certainly, if your heart's open, then there's nothing, and that's the best defense in a way. You don't have anything hidden.
Correct. And so then you can look at it, what's the attitude that you have towards, you know, what other people say. You know, the four agreements are just beautifully written in the sense of, you know, be impeccable with your word, never assume, always do your best is the last one, and don't take it personally. Mm-hmm. I knew there was another one in there. But don't take it personally is so important, but we do, right? And again, it's we do because we've been brought up that way, we've been conditioned that way. If you can actually start taking some of that out of there, then it reduces the amount of pressure that's on you in terms of being able to express yourself fully.
Mm.
You know, you going on to you creating your radio show, right? You have to operate from a place of, hey, I want to put the best thing that I can put out there. And if you get any kind of feedback, you're not going to take it personally, because you know that they're, if it's negative feedback, that is, you know, there's always a story behind the person who's saying it, right? Mm. And at the end of the day, doing your best is the most important. And never assuming is, in fact, going out and asking the questions.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, I mean, this is not my comfy zone, I should say, putting myself out into the world. I like to do it I will put myself out in the world in different ways, but, you know, it's not my favorite thing. So I really had to draw on my masculine imbalance to say, okay, well, why really am I doing this show? Like, what's the purpose of it? And then to leave people with healing tools that they can take into their lives, and with knowledge that might help to them on their healing journey, help them have more aliveness in their everyday life. And so I sort of went at it with the attitude of non-attachment. I'm going to put this stuff out there, and people will take from it whatever resonates with them. And I, at the same time, knowing that there's going to be a ton of judgment, not everybody will like the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really a drawing of my masculine to put this show out there for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I find myself in a situation where when we're running a lot of our workshops, it's primarily all women. So on many occasions, I am the only male in the whole room. And I've had to take myself to that place of not taking it personally when all of a sudden they start talking about the crappy men that are out there and how men are so bad at the feminine and so forth. Mm. And knowing that they're not talking about me. They're just expressing their point of view in the moment.
Mm.
What I find as well is that, you know, we tend to think in black and white, right? The yin and the yang, going back to that symbol. Interestingly enough, the center of both the yin and the yang is the opposite, right? That dot, right? So that there is, even within that symbol, there is the balance between the two and the balance within itself as well.
Mm.
We're so conditioned to believing a yay or a nay or whatever, that we've given up on all the different colors that are in between, all the different shades of gray that are in between. And we think that we always have to make a decision whether it's this side or that side. If we go back on even Canadian politics, I mean, when they did the referendum in Quebec, wasn't the vote 49.9 to 50.1? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so close, right? But it was a huge population that was divided in such a different way. And I'm sure that if they'd looked at it, that if they had asked the question in different ways, they would have gotten different responses. You know, not everybody, interestingly enough, I mean, if we look at the fact that there's a masculine and a feminine, what you were saying earlier, with the new generations coming through that aren't as black and white about it, that they're finding midpoints where they're the cross genders and so forth, you know, that's becoming more acceptable. I think it's just a question of it's more upfront.
Mm.
A little family skeleton. I have a cousin in Europe who came out and basically stated that he was gay. And his mother's response to it was to go and speak to the town priest and really ask the question, what was she going to do about it and so forth, and this is such an unusual thing and so on and so on. The priest basically turned around to her and basically said, you would be amazed how many people in the village are, but they just never told anybody.
Mm.
You know, again, it's that part about being secretive. It's the part about holding on to a belief system that really doesn't fit into this world anymore and not being willing to show yourself in your vulnerability.
You know, and we just finished, my co-author and I just finished putting together a book of women's power stories, and that was about a 3 or 4 year project, but one of the most stunning takeaways I learned from it was that I had put, you know, femininity or what it means to be feminine in a box, in a really tight box. And of course, through having 26 stories written by different women, all representatives of the sacred feminine, but in very different ways, I realized, holy crap, Jen, like, you've been putting it in this little box, whereas there is no box around what it means to be a woman. That it, you know.
I totally agree.
And the same thing for a man. Is that what you're saying?
Here's an interesting one. We did a group discussion around what are the advantages of being a white male in this modern society.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an absolutely hysterical. Everybody started off by thinking of all the negative things, right? And then all of a sudden we got into the fun stuff, you know, like, hey, underwear for men are cheaper than underwear for women. You know, haircuts are cheaper than, my wife pays literally 3 to 4 times more for her haircut than I pay for mine. Mm. I mean, there's some great advantages about being a man. But then some of the other ones, which were kind of, you know, they were kind of cool on the one hand, but sad on the other hand, a white male right now can almost do anything he wants.
Mm.
Because if he goes and does something stupid, he's kind of, it's put off to the side of, oh, he's just being a man. Mm. And we get excused for it, right? So men don't necessarily have to step up and take any responsibility for their life because it's almost taken away from them. So they can almost get away with doing anything they want. So where does that lead them? It leads them down this road of really, falsifying the who they are, being totally distant from their sacred self, not being in tune with their soul, and looking for any form of satisfaction, being totally in the physical world rather than anything else.
Mm. Yeah, it reminds me of the bailouts, all the bailouts that are happening in the world now, like no responsibility for what those people have done with, working class people's money.
Mm.
You know, it's just like, okay, well, we'll bail you out and we'll keep bailing you out.
Yep.
I didn't think I was going to bring this up, but I think I am going to talk about it just because it's a fairly big movement, and in some ways it's a little bit concerning to me. There's a movement called the Men's Movement, and they have a conference every year, and they did a show on it on CBC a while back, and I think it started out with good intentions, where the men were coming together to speak about these big issues that were affecting men and that are affecting men. But it it sort of has started to turn into, according to some reporters who have gone in to cover this, a huge conference that draws men from all over Canada and America that starts to turn in a little bit to a woman bashing session. And one of the reporters was saying, men come together and they've been talking about how unfair some of the laws are around child support payments and how often they can see their kids and all that stuff. Like actual valid things that I think are affecting men in adverse ways. But the way this frustration and anger was being shown was in things like a man saying, you know, whose daughter came home, and a teenage daughter, and had shared with him that she had been raped, and he said to her, "Well, you know, you must have done something to encourage this." And the reporter who was reporting on this, he said, "I was kind of mystified by this whole thing. Like, what is going on?" And he said, "When I listened to men, it was like this sense of entitlement," which kind of links with what you were saying. Mm-hmm. This kind of thing, like men can do anything and they don't have a responsibility to their actions. But it was kind of a scary interview to listen to be quite honest. Just how, you know, men were not actually dealing with these issues that were real issues for them. They were kind of going into this whole other energy of this against women energy, which I thought was, a little bit frightening.
I would totally agree with that. It would be extremely frightening. I think what happens in something like that is what we call groupthink, right, where all of a sudden the group gets the energy to all of a sudden support one another, and before you know it goes in the wrong way. Look at what happens at soccer games, at the finals and so on, where all of a sudden the fans go out and turn all the cars upside down and loot places and so forth. I mean, that's what we call groupthink, where you would never do that on your own, but all of a sudden it's okay because it's in a group format. And it's, I think, well, I would assume that, it's very easy to have someone start infiltrating a good intention and poisoning it very quickly, because some of those people are still going to be stuck in their fear, in their greed, and so on.
And without strong leadership and someone that can hold the space while keeping it actually on track with the issues that are real, that men actually do need to work through, I'd imagine that, like you said, it's just really easy to get derailed into anger. Right. And these other places.
And that's happened here as well every once in a while, where we have someone who comes forth and all of a sudden does a woman bashing. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting how the other men will very quickly steer that into a totally different way. Mm-hmm. We had a purification ceremony, which was absolutely a wonderful evening, where I think we were 8 or 10 of us, and we all went in and we actually did the opposite. We went in to actually praise and ask forgiveness of the feminine in all the directions of the wheel. Mm. When we came out, the two women that were on the outside, they were the ones that were bawling their eyes out. Mm. Right? Because there was so much energy going out there, and it was really interesting how each person who took a position could speak from that position. And some of the pains that we know that we have put out, and to be able to release all that on behalf of all brothers was really magical. Mm. But how many other people out there are going to do that, I don't know. I think you're absolutely right. We need some very strong leadership. And, I think the only way that we're going to get there is literally to go back and look at the fact that it's really time for the men to let go of the reins. Mm-hmm. And it's time to actually sit there and to say, you know, we've done now for a couple thousand years and we're not doing too well.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I taught, I was working with some grade fives, a class of 30 grade fives, and I was teaching them, some of these principles. And we were talking about the circle of law, which of course is a an ancient circle that's been used for a long time by Algonquin people, where the lawmakers, they sit in all different directions, and every one of those directions represents a particular energy that they have to speak through. So, for instance, if you're sitting as a woman's chief, you are speaking from the point of view of a woman's perspective on whatever issue is brought to the circle. And then you have, in the north, you have a masculine counterpart to that, where the men always sat in the hunter position and they speak from that position on whatever the issue is that's being presented. And one of the funny thing was, these kids in grade 5 in BC, they study governance and government systems and democracy, all sorts of different voting systems or not voting systems, you know, governing systems around the world. And the kids were saying to me, you know, why doesn't our legal system work like this? They said, when we watch the government and the legislature, they're all yelling over each other and heckling each other. And how does anything really get done? And I thought that was really interesting. I said, well, why do you think it might be important, or why might it be important to have an equal amount of men and women sit on that circle? And both the boys and girls saw, because there are women and men, or boys and girls, they have different perspectives on things. They're equally as important, but they're different, and they both have to be considered. A woman's experience is different than a man's experience. So even 10-year-olds could see that this was an important thing. Which kind of gives me hope, actually, because those are the 10-year-olds that are going to be, you know, in those positions, you know, 20 years from now or 30 years from now. But it kind of speaks to some of the changes that that you've been finding too, that we've been talking about. So there's another question I want to ask, actually a couple more questions.
Okay.
There are two books that have really made an impression on me, and I don't know if you've read them, Andre, but in terms of just putting a man's experience into focus. One of them is called The Hidden Spirituality of Men, that was written by Matthew Fox, which I highly recommend. And the other is Iron John by Robert Bly. In the book by Robert Bly, he says that most American men today do not have enough awakened or living warriors inside to defend their soul houses. And that most people, men and women, don't know what genuine outward or inward warriors look like or feel like, unquote. What does warriorship have to do with masculine's naturalness, and why might it be an important quality to really start to hone?
I would say that the warriorship is really a really important energy when you're going after the who you are.
Mm.
Right? Typically, when we look at warrior energy, and it was funny, when these kids were doing the drumming journey for their warrior animal, right? We talked about, why would you need a warrior animal? You're not going into battle, but you are. You're going into battle for yourself. You know, what happens when you're going on a canoe trip and you're out by yourself, or you're doing in a tent in the middle of nowhere? You know, the energy that you want to call up is in fact your warrior one, which is the one which is willing to tackle something to the nth, right? That walks away from the fear and can look at things from a totally different perspective.
So it's a quality of inner warriorship, mm-hmm. where you absolutely go after things and you're not willing to give up until you've conquered something inside of yourself that's a block.
That's the way I would describe it.
Mm.
You know, the warrior was always the one who was protecting something and at the same time would actually put his life down for it. So that kind of energy when you're doing your own work is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting too, because I was talking to someone that has warrior in their medicine name the other day, and they were saying to me, you know, people think that warriorship has to do with protecting, but it actually has a lot to do with guardianship, more to do with guardianship than protecting something. How do you hold something in a sacred way? And I thought, wow, that's kind of an interesting spin on how we've been taught to look at what a warrior is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, guardianship would be extremely important. It's a nice way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. It takes the fight out of it for me too, to look at just, okay, well, what's sacred and how can I guard that or hold it in a sacred, more sacred way, instead of always feeling like I have to fight something or overcome something, which I think is the way my masculine has been programmed. It's a lot more work that way for me.
Yes.
So we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to know if you have a simple tool or a practice that men and women can practice at home to connect with their sacred masculine more.
The one that I've been using lately, which takes a while for people to step into and to get the warrior energy, if you will, to actually do it, is to ask forgiveness. It happened to me. I had the opportunity when my mother was out in Vancouver and had a stroke and ended up being in the hospital. And so I flew out to see her and spent some time with her, and all of a sudden got the courage up to ask her forgiveness for all of what I had done to her and all the wrong that I had done and so forth. And it was an amazing, brilliant, heart opening and revelation and loosening. Oh. And recently I've been helping this one gentleman go through, you know, get out of his head and go into his heart space and really working from that. And I remember proposing it because he had so much negative energy towards his father in particular. And kept suggesting that, well, you know, maybe what you need to do is do the forgiveness piece. And we came out of a purification lodge, and he actually had his heart fully open, and he actually ran out, and instead of debriefing, he walked out and got into his car, pulled out his cell phone, and called his father in Florida and asked for forgiveness. Yeah. And he came out, and he says, my God, that was amazing. Yeah. But the other part of it is to do it without the expectations, without any judgments, without falling back to old patterns, but just, can you say what you need to say, and can you actually walk away from that?
Yeah, and the person might not be in the place of being willing to forgive you, but you can still forgive yourself and just feel good that you were actually able to be vulnerable and say what needed to be said. Yeah.
It's a big piece. You know, there's so much miscommunication going on. Right? And it starts with us. Or the only way to change it is just to be us. You know, and to be able to step into that place and take the responsibility of doing the work that we need to do to move through. Mm. And it's amazing how it will change your world.
Wow. And I think that the other beautiful thing that I'm hearing is not about blaming or shaming. It's about just taking responsibility for the things that we have put into motion, whether we're men or women. And then walking out our lives in a new way from that point forward, knowing, you know, we can't change the things that we did. You know, we can't change the history of our species the last 2,000 years. But we can certainly move forward in a new way. With what we know today. Yeah. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Andre.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jen.
It was a pleasure. To find out more about Andre and the work he does, or even to buy the new book, go to www.horsespiritconnections.com. Thanks to Andre for coming on the show to share his wisdom with us, and thanks to all of our listeners, and to the producer of the show, Mariel Smith. Good night, everyone, and see you next time.